Well, good afternoon, everybody here. We are continuing with our new series, Letters on Occult Meditation, video commentary. And we have arrived at letter number one, after dealing with the introduction. And as I said, I expect Tuya to join me at some point when we're speaking about the Deva Kingdom. But for now, we have completed externalization of the hierarchy. Well, how can you talk about completing it? You know, at least responses to what the Tibetan has said have been given. And maybe those responses will be of use to you as you read and or view, listen to, think about one of the most important books dealing with the power to serve in the present days. And even though it was written some 70, well, it's a collection of essays, you see. So it was written even from early days with the Lucis Trust. So the essays spread out pretty much from the 1930s to the end of Alice Bailey's life incarnation, I should say, in 1949. And this book, the Letters on Occult Meditation, is one of the earliest books, although published later as a collection of letters. And there are a couple of letters from 1919, but the others have been originating pretty much in 22. So I think he'll tell us when the letters were written. Let's see. Okay, letter one, which is the alignment of the ego with the personality, the absolute fundamental of what we have learned to do or are learning to do with regard to occult meditation. The alignment of the ego with the personality, and then there are some divisions in this chapter or this letter, the aligning of the three lower bodies. That's point one. Number two, the aligning with the causal body. And number three, the method of alignment. And number four, macrocosmic and microcosmic alignment. So, we begin, and this is Sunday, May the 16th, 1920. Alice Bailey advised us not to pay too much attention to the exact date of the letter because it may not signify when it was received, but more likely when it was being sent out, perhaps to students. She sought to downplay the astrological relevance of it. So it is in the aligning of the three vehicles, the physical, the emotional, and the lower mind body, within the causal periphery, because the causal body does extend far beyond the periphery of these vehicles, and they're stabilizing there by an effort of the will that the real work of the ego or higher self in any particular incarnation can be accomplished. So, you know, our maps, let's see if we have some maps here. I think we should. Um, Okay, so here we have one of our maps, and we're talking about, I mean, of course, so many of you do know this, but we're talking about aligning the three vehicles here, the etheric physical, the astral, and the lower mental within the causal periphery. And that's when the real work of meditation can be accomplished. Okay. The great thinkers of the race, the true exponents of lower mind, because that's pretty much what a great thinker is, as far as we have evolved. There are others who think in a still higher way. The great thinkers of the race, the true exponents of lower mind, are fundamentally those whose three lower bodies are aligned: mind, emotions, and etheric physical. And that is to say, those whose mental body holds the other two in circumspect alignment. They, the lower vehicles do not escape from the jurisdiction of the lower mind. The mental body then is in direct communication, unobstructed and free from interference, straight through to the physical brain. And sometimes we're told we have an alignment mind-brain or soul-mind-brain. It's oftentimes the astral body, least disciplined perhaps on our planet and in our solar system, that is problematic and out of alignment. When the alignment is fourfold, when the three above mentioned bodies are aligned with the body of the higher self, the causal or egoic body, and let's see here, and held steady within its circumference, whether that is a spherical form or an ovoid form, then the great leaders of the race, those who emotionally and intellectually sway mankind, can be seen as working, can be seen working. So all of this, the effect of these different types of people upon humanity as a whole, depend upon these inner alignments, some of which are more complete than others. Then the inspirational writers, where do they get that inspiration from? You know, from the higher spiritual sources within themselves. Then the inspirational writers and dreamers can bring down their inspirations and dreams. Then the synthetic and abstract thinkers can transfer their conceptions to the world of form. Okay. So we have two different kinds of alignments. The first involves the personality, but maybe not the soul. The great thinkers of the race, the true exponents of lower mind, are fundamentally those whose three lower bodies are aligned. And it doesn't say anything here about the soul per se. But then we have the inspired ones and the abstract thinkers, and they sway far more human beings and are the true great leaders of the race. So they emotionally and intellectually sway mankind when the alignment is fourfold, and when the three personality vehicles are aligned with the body and even within the body of the higher self, within its periphery. So then comes the inspiration, the dreams, the abstract, synthetic and abstract thoughts, and not before, because simply to have the lower mind as the director is not enough to reach into the world of higher inspiration, as DK is describing it here. It is right through a question of the unimpeded channel. So that is an important point. And many of us, you know, we from time to time, in meditation maybe, or in emergency, we have this unimpeded channel. And at other times we simply do not, and the magical process cannot really occur, bringing the higher possibilities into lower expression. Study, therefore, in this connection, and when time permits, he says, physical coordination, then to physical coordination add emotional stability. You know, we can see how the training in maturity of the child growing up and the human being developing is so necessary. And you have two vehicles functioning as one, and that is called, you know, integration. Two vehicles. When two vehicles function as one, you, and I should say two or more vehicles function as one, you have integration. When the coordination extends to the mental body, the threefold lower man is reaching his apotheosis, his peak of attainment, and has rung most of the changes in the world of form. And we might say that this takes a long time. So we cannot imagine that regulation by the lower mind is something that happens immediately. The truly mental petals, beginning with petal 7, do not open for millions of years. So that would be the direction from the level of mind. There are abilities to use the mind. The third petal of every tier has a mental quality, and one can still have a good mind and be in the hall of ignorance as far as understanding that there is a higher, or that there is a pair of opposites, and there is a higher of the pair of opposites. Later, and I would say, well, especially, you know, once the latter part of the fifth petal is opening, Later comes coordination perfected with the higher self. In this case, we're not calling the spiritual triad the higher self, even though it is, and even though the monad is a higher self. We're simply saying that the egoic lotus, the consciousness within the egoic lotus, the consciousness within the causal body can be called the higher self. And that's what we're dealing with in these early letters. Later comes coordination perfected with the higher self. The channel of communication reaching in line direct via an unimpeded funnel. The idea of communication from above to below via a funnel is emphasized, and sometimes these funnels are drawn in the diagrams that we have from Master DK. And the idea of a funnel or a vortex suggests the manner in which the higher communicates with the lower, and maybe there are inverted funnels or vortices which allow a reciprocal type of communication or upreaching from the low to the high. So later comes coordination perfected with the higher self. That's one of the things that most of us as students are aiming for. The channel of communication reaching in line direct via an unimpeded funnel. What can impede? Impurity, chaos, impulsiveness in any of the vehicles can impede. If, he says, via an unimpeded channel, if I might so express it, to the physical brain consciousness. Basically, alignment is the beginning, and alignment is, in a way, the goal. It starts with the effort to align, it ends with the alignment completed. Heretofore, it has only been direct at rare intervals. We have those moments when an unimpeded channel is created. So we have to be aware of those particular moments when something really comes through, something of a higher nature, and usually not registered. The four lesser brain centers are functioning at high vibration in the man of a highly coordinated personality. And notice he's dealing with the results of certain interior chakras here. And I think if you turn to page 170 or so, I'll go here in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. And we'll see what happens, whether these centers are discussed. I think so. So here we have man partially controlled by the ego, advanced man. The head, that is, the four lesser centers and their synthesis, the alpha major. So really there are five here, and not only four, as given in Letters on Occult Meditation. Then eventually, once there is the first initiation, we have what's called the spiritual man, and the seven internal head centers are found to be active, and they are pretty much ruled by Vulcan, Yeah. And I'm just going to, you know, emphasize these. Okay. And I assume you can see them. My problem is I sometimes fail to switch to the screen that I'm trying to share. But in this particular case, I think I have. Okay, now I go back. So the four lesser brain centers, which are reflections of four lower chakras among the seven interior chakras in the head, are functioning at high vibration in the man of the highly coordinated personality. Notice that when we start to deal with the fifth kingdom, it may well be five brain centers, but we're still at the moment dealing with the highly developed, the advanced man, who is not yet, I think, an initiate of the first degree. He has not yet entered the Hall of Wisdom. He has not yet taken the first initiation. So this is the first part. The four lesser brain centers are functioning at high vibration in the highly coordinated personality. And we see many of these on the world stage at this time. And they have a presence, and they are directors, and they are in control. When the ego is nearing alignment with the lower bodies, the pineal gland and the pituitary body are in process of development. The relationship between them is stimulated when the ego and the lower bodies are aligned, or at least beginning alignment. And when they are functioning with correlation, which eventuates by the time the third initiation is taken, you know, we have the Venus Ajna and the Vulcan head center, and maybe some other planet ruling the Alta Major center. But this is maybe the important one, bringing the pituitary and pineal glands in the brain into correlation. Then the third, or Alta Major center, intensifies its hitherto gentle vibration. And so what he seems to be saying here is that the Alta Major center does become important at the third degree, and then a triangle above the head, at the brow, and at the base of the skull begins to function in a more rapid and well-coordinated manner. The person can take the third degree, and the person has a certain dispelling radiance which can make of that individual a true healer, at least the beginning of the true esoteric healing abilities are found in that individual. Okay. And when the fifth initiation is taken, the interplay between the three centers is perfected. I guess it begins before that time, but there is a state called perfection, and the alignment of the bodies is geometrically rectified, and you have then the perfected fivefold Superman This is the master of the wisdom, or a Lord of Compassion. It's a fifth degree individual. So here, step by step, DK gives us the progress. And it all has to do with centers in the brain, in the ethers interpenetrating the brain, and other higher centers in the head, or above the head, or within the highly esoteric head center, about which Master DK has refrained to say too much. I mean, he was questioned by Saggioli on these matters, Roberto Saggioli, who was an initiated disciple, and still Master DK was reticent. So from the four centers to the five to the seven, and to the center above the head, Vulcan, and the center at the forehead, Venus, and then the adding of the Alta Major center and the gradual correlation of the three until they reach a perfection later when the fifth initiation is taken. And then we have what's called a geometrically rectified alignment, and perhaps not until then. For the average man, then, this alignment occurs only at intervals, in moments of stress, in hours of needed humanitarian effort, and that we can call, I think, service. We've been told that service calls forth the very best that we have within ourselves, and that it can even supersede in its effectiveness, it can supersede meditation. Okay. And moments, times of intensest aspiration. So we want to be those who can achieve the alignment at will. And not only in these very compelling moments, stressful moments, demanding moments. I mean, it's good if we can indeed achieve then and notice that we are achieving, but we also want to be able to achieve at will, no question. So then for the average man, then, this alignment occurs only at intervals, and we can look at ourselves and wonder in our own lives, has the alignment occurred, and has it been intervallic, and what has brought it on? You know, maybe moments of deep meditation too have brought this into prominence. Abstraction of a more or less degree has to enter in before the ego takes continued notice of the personality or lower self. And this is, in a way, what's called pratyahara. And I think I've been living in the Scandinavian country so long, I look at a J and it sounds like a Y. Pratyahara. It's the fifth means of yoga. It means a withdrawal or abstraction. So abstraction of a more or less degree has to enter in before the ego takes continued notice of the personality. Notice that word continued, because the ego, I have the impression that DK has said, even finds it a somewhat distasteful thing to have to deal with the personality of the man that it is supervising. But there does come a point when we really do have a downward pointing soul, and attention is much more constant because the personality has reached a point of development where that attention from the soul, from the ego, can function under the law of economy, and it won't just be wasted attention. So when that abstraction involves the emotions, we learn how to pull back from identification with these personality states, is based in the mentality and contacts the physical brain, then alignment is commencing. So I assume that many of us who have been for years working in this field, we do somewhat recognize this kind of abstraction, and the Raja Yoga slight meditation, I have a body, but I'm not that body. I have emotional states and desires, but I am not them. I have a lower mind, but I am not the processes of the lower mind and all of its thoughts. And then what am I? And we find ourselves to be the soul, the consciousness in incarnation, but recognizing that we are really something other than we have been identifying with for so many millions of years. The people today are still afflicted with body consciousness, and they treat the body very well as if it is their identity, and they become happy when it's in good shape and can allow them to do what they want to do, and they become sad when the body weakens or is afflicted by some problem, some disease, and they just don't know about the inner constitution of man, thinking that everything that they might identify as inner is simply arising from matter. And that is a great mistake, a great reversal. And that has to be educated out of people by teaching them about the constitution of man, which will help them with that other necessity, which is knowledge of their next step ahead. So think back for a moment of when you have achieved the kind of alignment that he's talking about. And has it been achieved accidentally? Does it simply come upon you? And what is the change of consciousness when it does come upon you? If there is a change. Can you induce that alignment by will ever? Are there certain symbols or visualizations which help you achieve that alignment? It's a question, I think, largely of stabilizing a certain type of access to inner points of tension. we oftentimes live at a lower point of tension than is desirable for students of esotericism, of occultism, and we have to increase the point of tension. And that does occur when we manage to hold the personality within the periphery of the causal body and identifying as a consciousness within the causal body, control, regulate, manage the personality according to the spiritual ends that we intend. So when the abstraction involves the emotions, is based in the mentality, and you know, here we might even be able to eventually speak of the higher mentality, but at first the lower mind, and contacts the physical brain, then alignment is commencing. And without this kind of alignment, there will be no integration of the personality. There will be no integration of the personality with the soul, and eventually a state of fusion. There will be no integration of the soul-infusing personality with the impersonality of the spiritual triad. And of course, alignment with the monad and recognizing oneself as the true spirit in a state of being would be impossible. So again, alignment is what we strive for in the beginning, and alignment is the goal achieved at the end. So, as DK says here, hence the work of meditation, for it tends to abstraction, you know, disidentification, before there can be a state of all-embracing identification. There has to be a disidentification from perceptions that we commonly identify with. For it tends to abstraction and seeks to awaken to abstract consciousness, both the emotions and the mentality, and I guess there can be a flood of love energy, Buddhic energy, coming into the emotions, and a flood of higher mind, supermind, even eventually universal mind, coming into our mentality if we manage to achieve the mind held steady in the light. There's all kinds of lights held steady in the light of the soul, the light of the triad, which is the true soul, even the relatively unfettered light of the monad, which has a very strong ray effect upon the lower mind. So he's giving us desirable objectives, and he's telling us that meditation is a way, since it tends to abstraction, which helps us find out who we really are, it's a way to achieve those objectives. And I think we will find that in intense meditation, intense service, in a state of lower self-forgetfulness, there's a self-remembrance from a higher perspective and a taking of the eyes off the lower personal self from the lower perspective. And when we can do those things, our objectives of living at higher and higher points of tension and revelation will be achieved. Okay. Now comes a section that deals with alignment and vibration. Forget not either that it is largely a question of matter and vibration. He's talking about the atomic constituents of our vehicles and the degree, the frequency of the vibration of those constituents. I mean, some of us just have a fairly sluggish brain, and the brain cells are not at all as stimulated as they must be to have these kinds of elevations of realization, of revelation, of consciousness. The abstract levels of the mental plane consist of the three higher levels, the first being that of the third subplane, you know, on which the causal body of the average man is found. And here again, you know, just to zero in on what we're talking about, he's talking about above the dotted line, these three subplanes on which are found certain important powers, kind of a discernment is found here on subplane three, and group response to group magnetism is found on subplane two, and spiritual telepathy on subplane number one. I think it's good to have in mind the kinds of cities or powers that pertain to each subplane and therefore to a point of tension which opens up the phenomena, the patterns, the impacts of that particular subplane. Without an adequate point of tension, we cannot turn the key, so to speak, of any particular subplane and register that which is there found. It'll just be a dumb note for us, and we will not know because we have not penetrated at a sufficient degree of focused, immovable will, which is a definition of a point of tension. Okay. So this is about alignment and vibration. The abstract levels of the mental plane consist of the three higher levels, the three higher qualities of the mental plane. The first of these higher subplanes of higher mind is the third subplane, if we count from below. And as I have explained to you before, each subplane has its correlations on the major planes. So maybe, you know, let's see if we could correlate somehow the third subplane of the mind with the atmic plane, the second subplane with the monadic plane, and the very first and highest subplane on the systemic mental plane to be correlated then with the logoic plane. Let's see if he puts it that way or in some other way that indicates the correlation that he's talking about. When therefore you have built into your bodies physical, emotional, and mental matter of the third subplane of each of those planes, then the higher self commences. I almost want to make that a capital. am I justified? Anyway, the higher self commences consciously and evermore continuously to function through the aligning personality. So let's look at that once again and make sure that we have it in our minds. We'll, you know, kind of use the law of fixation to fix it in our memory. When therefore you have built into your bodies, and you know, and that's usually well, can we correlate that with the second initiation? Sometimes he says, at the fourth initiation, you have 100% atomic matter in your lower vehicles. At the third initiation, 75%. At the second initiation, 50%. But if we begin to go down the subplanes with each initiation, maybe the third subplane has a correlation with the second initiation. And then the fourth and final ether, as it's usually four etheric subplanes above three denser subplanes, that would give us the 25% atomic matter and a focus upon the fourth ether. So, you know, we have the, how is it described, atomic, subatomic, super etheric, etheric. If we're looking for names for one, two, three, four etheric subplanes descending from the atomic subplane. So if you've built into your bodies through transmutation and general refinement, and into the bodies which are physical, etheric, emotional, and mental, matter of the third subplane of each of those planes, we're not in the realm of density, we're in the realm of the etheric counterpart of any one of those planes. Then the higher self commences consciously and evermore continuously to function through the aligning personality. And let's just see what that looks like on the map. And basically, we have chakras found on the fourth sublevel of each of those planes. But when it comes to the etheric physical, he's talking about the third subplane on which is found the throat center, controlling all the other lower chakras. And then when regarding the chakras on the astral level, the third subplane again gives us the astral throat center. But when we come to the third sublevel of the mental plane, we have instead the knowledge petals, because it seems that the vortices have not been completed in the development of man so far, and that the solar angel is helping with that completion. And again, it would be correlated, the third sublevel would be correlated to knowledge and to the throat center. Eventually, the egoic lotus will be disintegrated or burst into flame, and probably the time will come when, just like the etheric subplanes and just like the etheric aspect of the emotional subplanes, there will come a head, heart, and throat vortex on the first, second, and third subplanes of the mental plane. But not until later, and then that will probably operate in some scientific manner regarding the creation of a Mayavarupa, which looks exactly like the model, which often is the body in which the becoming master took his fifth initiation. So there will be, what I'm trying to say here is that there will be vortices, I believe, after the solar angel's assistance on the first, second, and third subplane, but not yet. Right now, the knowledge petals, the love petals, the mental sacrifice petals, they take the place of those vortices, even though it can be questioned whether there is ever a movement of the egoic lotus to the first subplane. There are some statements that tell us that the jewel and the lotus can be found in that borderland between the highest aspect of the first mental subplane and the lowest aspect of the seventh or lowest Buddhic subplane. But not much more is elaborated there. It does seem, from what I've been able to gather, that the destruction of the causal body takes place when the egoic lotus is focused on the second subplane, and that the fourth initiation is taken through an egoic lotus focused on the second subplane. But then we have, of course, we have the triad and the various permanent atoms of the triad. And that is the abstract mind is still above the egoic lotus and responsible for much of the building and the ray structure of the egoic lotus. So not everything is given, but if we follow out the implications, I think we can see what is intended after the egoic lotus is destroyed. Okay, so we have always, oftentimes using the Om to drive away matter of lower vibration and magnetically absorb matter of higher vibration. And that's what he means by building into your bodies matter of the third subplane, and of course we will also be building matter of the second subplane and first subplane, atomic matter, where he gives that proportion of 25%, 50%, 75%, and 100% correlating with the first through fourth initiations. Maybe one of the reasons why the physical body is often going to disappear at the fourth initiation is because the etheric body is made entirely of atomic matter. And maybe that cannot sustain the physical body and incarnation. And yet there are those masters who do, through whatever special provisions, retain their physical body after the fourth initiation. And even, as in the case of Master DK, retain the physical body after the fifth initiation for whatever purpose. When it comes to Chohanship, I think it's much less likely to retain the original physical body. DK further says, perhaps we might reverse the idea and state that it is only when third subplane matter of a certain percentage, you see, and here's our problem, which percentage is one of the secrets of initiation, is contained in the vehicles, that the personality as a conscious whole recognizes and obeys the higher self. This is, you know, the higher power as it is discussed in the 7-step, 12-step programs, you know, which have helped so many people. We are told about a percentage of atomic matter, which is correlated with each of the first four initiations, but we're not told of the percentage of third subplane matter, which allows communication to begin to occur with the higher self. It's interesting, third sign, Gemini, higher and lower pairs of opposites, communication of those opposites. It looks like that well before the first initiation, there can be some growing communication between the personality consciousness and that within the personality, which is more akin to the higher of the pairs of opposites. So one of the secrets of initiation, good to know, and you know, we don't have to be assured of what that percentage is, but we do know that for the average man, the causal body, even of the intelligent man, is found on the third sub-level, the third sub-plane. And some kind of communication with this higher power is already beginning in such an advanced man. He may not yet be a true aspirant. A true aspirant is one who has taken the first initiation. So he may not be any kind of initiate of the first degree, but he is already reaching towards this higher entity that has infused his own causal body with a projection of itself, having pervaded the entire universe of the causal body. With a fragment of myself, I remain. So maybe we can call that projection, maybe we can call it the angel of the presence. I have to speculate on some of these things because the confirmation is not yet ascertained. So, with third subplane matter of a certain percentage, the personality has as a conscious whole recognizes and obeys the higher self. Now again, we would pause and we would ask each one of ourselves, do we recognize and obey what we deem to be our higher self. It is, you know, an intimate relationship. And the question is it established within our nature? Now, obviously, you know, if the third ray is involved in the third subplane, then cultivating the mind, you know, bringing more light into the mind is one of the methods of bringing about a higher percentage of third subplane matter within our various vehicles. I'm sure the vehicles of different human beings are characterized by different percentages of certain types of matter of a certain frequency in their vibratory character. And through study, through meditation, etc., a higher percentage of higher subplane matter can be brought in. And of course, as stated, the use of the Om is of value in this regard. So, you know, even though this is one of the first books, we can understand that it has many important hints that are given in a rather direct way, so that we can really see the foundation of some of the thoughts he has developed further on in the books. There's a lot of clarity in this particular book. And D.K. rarely repeats himself, so we do have to consult what he has said in order to know what he is saying. So going on, after such a percentage is attained, it is then necessary to build in matter of the two higher subplanes on the physical and emotional planes. Notice he doesn't use the mental plane, because on the mental plane, the egoic lotus is substituting. It's substituting for subplane matter. Eventually there will be that kind of subplane matter, but pretty well this is taken over by the nature and extent and scope of the egoic lotus. So whenever we deal with the two higher subplanes of any sevenfold plane, we are dealing then with the occult subplanes, and they are related more to divinity than to spirituality, if we have that definition that the divine relates to the spirit and the spiritual more to the soul. Well, you know, words can get in the way here, and DK tries at times to be specific about the words, but he often deplores what he has to work with and seems almost frustrated by the necessity of having to use certain words which don't hold his meaning. So after such a percentage, whatever it is, you know, maybe, you know, we could speculate, but is attained, it is then necessary to build in matter of the two higher subplanes on the physical and emotional planes. So that is matter of the first and second ether, counting from above, and the first and second etheric portions of the astral plane. And there we have, you know, emotional idealism and imagination as the two powers resident on the astral plane on those two sublevels. Hence the struggle for the aspirant to purify and discipline the physical body and to subdue the emotional. The struggle. And we all have been through that, and we may have recurring bouts when purification and subjugation are necessary. Hence the struggle for the aspirant to purify, you know, submit to the burning ground, submit to fire, and subjugate, to hold down through the will, to hence that struggle to purify and discipline, to purify and subjugate the etheric vehicle, and hence the physical, and then the astral vehicle, which maybe causes the most difficulty for the modern disciple. Purification and subjugation describe the work to be done on the two planes. Now, is he saying that, is he applying both words to both planes, or is he saying, I mean, I can see how he could, or is he saying purification applies to the etheric physical and especially to the instinctual nature of the dense physical, and subjugation to the astral? Either way, it would work. Purification and subjugation describe the work to be done on the two planes. And this involves the use of lower mind and the three lower vehicles thus become aligned. But obviously, you know, it's going to take attention, it's going to take work, more work than many people sign up for, as it were, more than they bargain for. The path seems so filled with promise of easy attainment and elevation. And then it turns out to be a thorny path and a real slog onward, where it is necessary to remind oneself to keep on keeping on, which is one of those kind of phrases that was popular in the early Alice Bailey group. And when we can keep on keeping on, we definitely will attain. So purification and subjugation describe the work to be done on these two planes, and this involves the lower mind, and the three lower vehicles thus become aligned. It's not just going to happen automatically. Well, maybe if we're not treading the path of initiation, the development of humanity will gradually proceed anyway, and we will be lifted up into a higher vibratory state, however slowly that may occur. But much time has been lost on the moon chain, as we can infer from reading Master DK's account of all that, the failure there. And there are many who have been at this business of evolution and spiritual evolution for a long time, and they are eager to make up for lost time and to get on with it. So Master DK sometimes tells us how far behind we are, but how rapidly we are moving now. And I think, you know, it's best to take advantage of that type of movement, which now becomes possible, that type of progress to which the door is open. And the Christ is a great example of that, having achieved in a much shorter time what many masters from earlier times than the Christ, in terms of their individualization, are still striving to attain. I am somehow impressed that this book has to be read very carefully, and that we should not think of it simply as an early book, whereas the real information is found in the later books. It's not at all like that. Every book has pieces that will be missed unless we, as the Tibetan simply says, read more carefully. And I'm finding this opportunity to comment on these books to be just such an opportunity to read more carefully. That doesn't mean, of course, that everything comes home with perfect clarity. But some things do, and we understand more of the great jigsaw puzzle which has been presented to us here. There are missing pieces in the wholeness, in the consciousness of each one of us. And we have to start to fill those in. Everybody will be putting the picture together in a different way, and different pieces will be missing. But we have to fill in those blanks with the right piece. And you never can tell where you will find it. Sometimes in some of the so-called easiest preliminary books, like Initiation, Human and Solar, like Letters on Occult Meditation. But they are not really devoid of profound esoteric information which may be needed later to clarify some section in the so-called more advanced books. Okay. The vibrations of the abstract levels can then begin to be felt. And we might say, once this purification and subjugation occurs. Purification. Because, you know, we want to feel the difference when energy streams from a higher point of tension begin to penetrate our normal consciousness. Otherwise, it's just a lot of words, you know. We have to feel the energy difference. And then we will know, you know, that some degree, at least, of progress is on the way. You need to remember that they come via the causal body, the vehicle of the higher self. Now, in this case, the higher self is the triad or monad. So the causal body, the egoic lotus, is a more material vessel for the containment of energies which really have their origin on much higher levels. We've used before the simile, you know, it's like a scabbard for the sword. The spiritual triad without the causal body is the unsheathed sword. With the causal body, the sword is in its sheath. But there can be, you know, penetration through the causal body. And that's the difference. Usually you don't use the scabbard for any kind of work except to protect the sword. But here, the penetration of those higher energies into the causal body allows for their transformation for usability on lower planes. And they can be transmitted through the causal body. Okay. So you need to remember that these vibrations from the abstract levels come via the causal body, the vehicle of the higher self. We use terms like self, higher self, soul, so inexactly. And, you know, in a way, DK keeps us fluid by not being too concrete in the use of those terms. We don't know, for instance, whether the soul means the soul in incarnation sometimes, our own extended monadic consciousness on the higher mental plane, whether it means a combination or mixture of energies from the solar angel and from our own highest principles together. We don't know whether we're talking about a solar angel and an angel of the presence, or whether we're talking more about the higher consciousness of man per se, distinct from the entity which infused that higher consciousness. So the context has always to be studied if we want to understand what some of these terms mean. And here we have the vehicle of the higher self. Well, it's pretty obvious when you look at the maps that he's given us that the spiritual triad or higher self or higher ego does use the causal body as a vehicle of distribution. But sometimes it can be a direct bestowal of energy, and then the causal body is not used. And more that is the case as we move into the period of the removal of the causal body. He says here, you need to remember that these vibrations, okay, come via the causal body, the vehicle of the higher self, and that the average causal body is on the third subplane of the mental plane. And this is a point which is not sufficiently recognized. Well, what, you know, what can it mean to us? And when we learned that when there is a sufficiency of third subplane matter built into the etheric vehicle and the astral vehicle, then there's going to be the possibility of real communication with what we call the soul or the higher self or the egoic lotus. You know, sometimes this term higher self is used without exactitude. It may really be the spiritual triad, but sometimes it's just the consciousness within the causal body. And when a sufficiency of third subplane matter is built in to these lower vehicles, then by numerical resonance, the three contacts the three. In other words, the causal body on the third subplane of the mental plane can contact and is contacted by the third subplane of the astral and etheric levels. So always watch for numerical resonance. A lot can be accomplished in a causal body before the first initiation is taken. The first initiation is taken when there's more of subplane matter number two and number one. The first initiation signifies the time, the moment, when that process, however long it takes, of moving the center of the causal body to the second subplane begins to occur. Now, we're not given the details on that, but we are told that the initiate of the first degree does have a causal body on the second subplane of the mental plane. And as there are sub-subplanes, you know, within that subplane, there are also seven divisions. We don't know on which of those subplanes or sub-subplanes the focus may be had. Maybe on the second. It's just like when you're looking for the focus of the Ajna Center, it's not given on the maps. But you imagine that it is on the first subplane, on a different sub-subplane than has been the case with the head center. Maybe you heard that extra little piece of music coming from my cell phone. Well, life is complicated and one has to be responsive in many ways. So anyway, at the time the first and second initiation are taken, or especially the first initiation, let's say, that's the moment of moving the focus of the egoic lotus causal body onto the second subplane. And I was saying that we don't know what sub-subplane it can be found upon, but we can imagine that the Ajna Center in the head, for instance, is found on one of the sub-subplanes of the very first plane. The head center is found on the first subplane of the etheric vehicle and of the astral vehicle, the first subplane of the astral vehicle, but no doubt, I would say, on a different sub-subplane than the head center. And therein would lie the distinction, but DK just hints at that and he doesn't elaborate. So, you know, every true aspirant has taken the first initiation, and this will mean that the causal body, egoic lotus, has indeed moved to the second subplane of the mental plane. But for the average person, it's on the third subplane. And this third plane, subplane, correlates with the stimulation of matter on the third subplane of the astral plane and on the third subplane of the normal etheric planes, counting down 1, 2, 3. And then there's something going on here as well with the knowledge petals, which in a way take the place of the vortex, which I presume will later be found on the third subplane of the mental plane. I know it sounds like a lot of, planitis here, and we have a lot of divisions and then divisions of the divisions and so forth. And I suppose the discriminative fifth ray is involved, but this is an example of the technicalities to be found. And people might say, well, why bother with all that? But when it comes to the science of energy, in which, or in relation to which, the solar angel is such an expert, we really will have to know these details. Because one day, we will see inside and we'll see the conditions of others and our students and so forth, and we will want to be of assistance. Now, I'm sure that if you had a surgeon operating on your brain or your heart, you'd want that surgeon to know the technicalities of the functioning of those organs. And I'll just make the analogy that it's similar when dealing with energy manipulation. We want to really know the science behind those manipulations, or rather, the flows of energy, so that we can help to direct. Now, at one point, I'm remembering Master DK talking to the initiate disciple, Roberto Sergioli, and saying, your master and I have been discussing whether we should widen the channel of energy, into your system. We decided against it because you're sufficiently sensitive. But even such a phrase as widening the channel, what are the technicalities involved in that widening? Obviously, it's a science. And obviously, it has to be understood by those who are helping with that operation or procedure. It has to be done correctly. So all of this is a way of saying, don't shun the technicalities. Be aware of them and store them in your mind. And basically, Alice Bailey was saying the same thing. Be aware of the facts and store the facts in a well-organized manner. And then you will not become confused when you are called upon to engineer or assist with the engineering of certain energy flows and certain opportunities for stimulation or destimulation. All right, my little sermon is done there. Real abstract thought becomes possible only when the personality has, by vibration reciprocal to that of the ego, aligned itself sufficiently to form a fairly, not completely, a fairly unobstructed, unimpeded channel. So, you know, I've talked to a lot of students and I said, well, look, you know, we certainly can have complexity in our thought. And many of us can deal with that complexity. I suppose if you read a book on organic chemistry, there's a point at which, my God, the complexity becomes, for those who are not sufficiently motivated, overwhelming. But it's not yet abstract thought. It's just complex, concrete thought. So the ability to achieve real abstract thought is a different gift, and it has to do with what I might call the elevation of perspective. How far back we can stand, how big a view we can achieve, how much we can include within the range of reasonable thought. Can we make a formula which includes many, many things and not necessarily each and every particular involved in those many things? There are certain formulas, and I do believe that the mental proposition for which a disciple is responsible in order to take the third initiation, that is, he has to make a mental proposal, kind of a thesis, as it were, is like a formula which includes many concrete instances, all embraced within this simplified proposition. We call such, we usually call them formulas. Going on here, just a little bit more, he says, then at intervals, rare at first, but of increasing frequency, will abstract ideas begin to filter down, to be followed in due time by flashes of real illumination or intuition from the spiritual triad or from the true threefold ego itself, i.e., yes, the spiritual triad. And so this is a useful prognostication of what the process will lead to. Then at intervals, when there is a fairly unimpeded channel, rare intervals at first, but of increasing frequency, a greater number of such moments will occur, then will abstract ideas from the realm of the abstract mind begin to filter down and to make their impression, to be grasped. And then he discriminates between those which follow, which are actual flashes of real illumination or intuition. We remember maybe that we have been reading about the source of intuition and how intuition is a Buddhic factor, and it is distinct from that wide-ranging, inclusive, abstract mind which receives ideas in a somewhat second-hand manner, whereas the true content of an idea as a being, maybe sometimes a being whose time has come, is the province of the intuition. But first, the abstract mind. It seems that that's the safest way to proceed, to develop the abstract mind and become an abstract thinker, and then open the door to intuition, which is less subject to Saturn, shall we say, and more to Uranus. There's a suddenness and an inclusiveness about intuition, which in the abstract mind still has to be broken out into a time sequence. And when we can compress all that appears to be extended in time into a flash of realization, a flash of revelation, so that the many are included in the one, then we have the intuition. So he's given a good sequence here. And the next 2,000 years, the sixth sub-race of the fifth root race will be given to the development of the abstract mind. But it's only when the sixth sub-race, the sixth root race really begins, that the intuition will be more directly cultivated, and this unimpeded channel will be widened and will be the property of more human beings, the internal property. Well, okay, friends. This is probably a program that's roughly an hour and a half. And I'm stopping here because a whole new subject is about to be presented, the cord of the ego. It's a DK, I suspect, in his old Pythagorean training, which was musical and mathematical both. So let's see where we are. Page something. Maybe page 4. You know, we're not racing through the book, are we? But there's so much to consider that we have to study in depth. And we will find, I think, that it ends up being faster than the horizontal study. So this is up to page 5, I guess. And our day here is the 18th of July. And we're going to next begin program number 3 in this new series of letters on occult meditation. So here we go. When you have two keyboards in front of you, you know, sometimes it's not so easy. But I do want to get properly oriented. So this has been the end of program number 2, and it has been on the 18th of July, and it's up to page 4, I think, page 4, not 5. And here we will have program 3, page 4 onward. And I don't know, can I continue today? I hope so. But I'll just be a little conservative and say XX in terms of the day that I will continue. Well, these are fascinating foundational issues, and every one of them could really be explored. It's all helping us build a sense of what is the science of relationship and how relationship alignment is dependent on different frequencies of vibration, how numerical affinity enters into the relationship equation, how when contact is to be established, numerical affinity is a very important ingredient, how the rare intervals of real contact with higher points of tension have to be made more and more continuous, and maybe how to induce these moments of contact more deliberately through meditation and service and awareness that when stress comes upon us, it is an opportunity. You know, with Master Moria telling us that obstacles are possibilities. When confronted with difficult obstacles, I wonder if that's the first thing we think about. So this has gone to not to page 5, but to page 4. And we realize that the very first thing we have to do, preparatory to the higher states of initiation, is really to align the ego with the personality, or maybe from our perspective, it's more aligning our personality with the ego, with the method of reaching the ego. The ego is the higher self, is the spiritual triad, but so often it is discussed as if it were the vehicle, the causal vehicle, the egoic lotus vehicle of that higher self. So we have to be aware of the context. What I'm doing is just offering, you know, some little points from what we've been reading here in letter one. And we're learning that ever greater alignment with ever greater points of tension within our nature will give us a greater scope of effective service until we become those who not only can think with accuracy, but become leaders to bring humanity to a higher state of realization. Eventually, I think we will find that the integrated personality shapes up as a kind of dweller on the threshold. It, for all its excellence, can be a formal obstacle to what the soul, aware of the divine plan, would achieve. So, you know, many, many pieces of information which are substantial to that which comes later. And, you know, we have to study with the fifth ray a book like this, which has these foundational items of information. Now, we are not yet the kind of expert a solar angel is in the manipulation of permanent atoms. And we don't have the ability of a master to work with our chakras in a safe and plan correlated manner. But all of that will be developed during the Aquarian Age, and our ability to take a position of greater usefulness will naturally grow in power. So we'll start here next on page 4, And we'll get into some of the musical considerations we might not think that a book like this might offer. These considerations. You don't have to be, of course, a musician to appreciate what he's talking about. This is a universe where vibration and frequency determine relationships, whether harmonious or discordant, and we have to understand what notes to emphasize in order to be in harmony with that which is intended to appear. Okay, friends, that'll be it. Lots of love, many blessings, and although I suspect, you know, we have an odd number of minutes for this program, I think it's best simply to stop when we have this new and quite different subject. It's still, in a way, part of letter one, which is all about achieving the alignment between the ego and the personality. So we'll be seeing you as shortly as possible from my point of view. Take care and study hard and meditate deeply and realize that the spreading of the knowledge of the ageless wisdom to those who can appreciate it is a great service. And I think many of us in the educational field can participate in that service. So we'll see you then shortly.